This is the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, best-selling author of Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once, Then Never Again. Now on air and worldwide, paytaxeslater.com. Now get ready to talk smart money.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Lang Money Hour, where smart money talks. I'm David Baer here in the KQV studio with Jim Lang, CPA, attorney, and author of three best-selling books, Retire Secure, The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once and Never Again, and most recently, Retire Secure for Same-Sex Couples. With a new city administration in place, 2014 has already seen many changes, from property tax rates to new technologies. What impact will these and other changes have on Pittsburgh? What impact will they have on you? To help answer these questions, we welcome Pittsburgh City Controller Michael E. Lamb to today's show. An attorney with a master's degree in public policy from the Hines School at CMU, Controller Lamb has overseen Pittsburgh's financial affairs for the last 7 years. As the city's fiscal watchdog, he protects tax dollars from waste, fraud, and abuse by conducting audits of all city departments and authorities, including the URA, Parking Authority, Water and Sewer Authority, and Housing Authority, making recommendations on how to make them more efficient and effective. To make government more transparent, he created OpenBookPittsburgh.com, a website that lets citizens search and view all city contracts, as well as campaign contributions and expenses for all candidates running for office in Pittsburgh. He also releases the popular annual financial report, which provides a clear picture of the state of Pittsburgh's finances, demographics, and government. Today's conversation will focus on what's in store for the city. Stay tuned for an interesting and informative hour, and with that, I'll say hello, Jim, and welcome, Controller Lamb.
Welcome, Michael. So before we get started, three quick anecdotes. When I was just out of law school, I needed some continuing education, and I took a class that Michael actually taught, and it was how to use some of the city services for attorneys, things like how to look up things. And I thought, wow, this guy really cares. He's taking a great effort, and I was really impressed. Then he's done a great job on two previous radio shows, and when my daughter Erica was doing an assignment for her class, which was to interview a political figure and make a report out of it, instead of brushing her off, Michael gave her a full time, and she got a great interview and just did very well. And then the other thing is, I will tell you that I have spoken with him at various political events and just find him to be extremely knowledgeable, and it's a great feeling to have somebody who I think is so competent being the city's controller. So anyway, Michael, one of the things that a lot of people want to know, and we've seen a lot of municipalities in enormous trouble, both short-term and long-term, how would you assess both, again, short-term and long-term financial health of Pittsburgh?
Well, first off, thanks, and thanks for having me and for the glowing introduction. I hope your daughter got an A on that paper. But I would tell you that when you look at the city situation, I think it's sort of a mixed bag, and I think when you think about where we were when I started there 7 years ago to where we are today, it's clearly a very positive picture. When you look at over the last 7 years, how much we've reduced our long-term debt, which is almost by half. How well our pension fund has rebounded from what was a really terrible market back in 2007, 2008, to where we are today, because of some very important decisions that the city made. One of those, obviously, I was very involved in the whole pension parking solution. It really did do long-term good for our pension fund. And while we still have very significant challenges both with respect to debt and pensions, we are in a significantly better place today than we were 7 years ago. But we still, the city of Pittsburgh's finances are mostly reliant on one thing, and that's population. When you think about the city and the things that we do, it's the people who live here the people who own property here, that's really our tax base. And when you think that, you know, since 1960, we've lost more than half of our population. You know, we had close to 750,000 people in this city in the late 50s, and we're down to 300,000 now. That's a big bite. And so, you know, now we are dealing with that loss. And that's something that most cities across the country are dealing with, just that natural migration out to suburbs. And while we have certainly seen that loss slow and even stop, we're hopeful that that's going to reverse and we're going to start to see growth again. We're not quite there yet. But having more people creates more economic activity, but also creates more tax base for the city. So, you know, when you say what's short-term, long-term, over the last years, we've done very well. We hope that that trend continues. We have a new administration now, and they're going through their first year, and hopefully they will continue the course that we're on. I'm a little concerned, frankly, about that, but hopefully, you know, that they'll get their feet and start to do some good things. And I think that when you think about us, you know, what are the things that need to happen? What are the pieces that are missing? We talk a lot in this city about the impact of our large nonprofit organizations, and they're great neighbors to this city and provide a lot of jobs here in the city. But one thing they don't provide are many tax dollars. And so one of the things that I know the new mayor is interested in is having them play a bigger role in city finances. That hasn't happened yet. And that's frustrating that it hasn't happened yet. But when you look at a city where 40% of the property is exempt from taxation, and that's our biggest source of taxation is property, you know, it's troubling that that they're not contributing more.
Well, certainly you're not talking about UPMC, which is a fine, upstanding citizen and purely a nonprofit that only works in nonprofit ways and methods of propagating itself.
They are the big daddy, aren't they? But you know, the thing about UPMC, as I said, they are a great neighbor. I mean, they provide a lot of jobs here. They do phenomenal work, you know, and provide great health care to people who live here in the city. You know, they are right now in the middle of a big battle about how they pay their lower level employees, and I'm one that has been in the middle of that fight, hoping that they will step up and pay, you know, living wages to the people who take care of us in their hospitals, you know, the people who are cleaning up the rooms and the people who are serving the food. And, you know, those people, they deserve to make a good family wage job. And I say that from the standpoint of being the city's controller, because I know that when we see those wages going up, I also see our tax revenues going up. And so you have an employer like UPMC with 50,000 employees. A small bump in salaries is a big deal for the city of Pittsburgh, because many of that 50,000 live right here in the city of Pittsburgh and are our taxpayers. So, you know, we have talked in terms of not only how much they're paying their employees, which we'd like to see them pay them more, but also the fact that they are not contributing to the property tax base. I mean, you know, they are the biggest property owner in the city. And the fact is that one property they have is more. If they paid taxes on one property, it'd be more than they contribute to the Pittsburgh Promise, which is their big charity and their big contribution to the community.
Are you? And I assume you're talking about what used to be the U.S. Steel Building.
No, actually, I'm not. Actually, they don't own the Steel Building.
Yet.
And again, we'll talk about good things that they do. One of the good things that they did was when they moved from Oakland to downtown, they moved into a building that they didn't own and a building that we do collect taxes on and significant taxes on. Mm. And I would say that when we talk about the downtown real estate market and how it has been so strong, one of the things that really kicked that off was UPMC taking up so much office space in downtown Pittsburgh. I mean, it has been a very positive thing. But the property that I'm talking about is the property where currently houses Children's Hospital.
Okay.
Which is if you look at it through the county's records, one of the most valuable pieces of property in the city, and wholly owned by UPMC and exempt from taxation.
All right. Well, earlier you were saying we are losing population to the suburbs and the surrounding area, and so now we're getting into Allegheny County in general. And it seems that there should be some correlation between our future, that is city residents and city dwellers, with Allegheny County residents, there has always been, I even remember, you know, way back, back with Mayor Murphy and even before, talks of consolidation, or at least at a minimum, and I know there's some going on, consolidation of services. And I know that, for example, that the county executive, Fitzgerald, Mayor Peduto was his guy. Is there some progress in that area, and can the city be relieved of certain expenses that maybe the county will pick up?
Yeah, it's an important thing, and I think let's start with the fact that city residents are county residents. So we are county taxpayers as well, and so there's an incentive for us to work together with the county just for the financial well-being of people in the city and also people in the suburbs. And so when you look at the city and the county, and then the way, I think the best way to look at that is, what are those things that we both do? Because there are a lot of things that the county does that we don't do, and a lot of things that we do that the county doesn't do. The county doesn't pick up garbage. It's one of the biggest things that we do. The city doesn't have a jail or a court system in the county. It's one of the biggest things that the county does. So so it's those areas where we do have similar work, and whether it's – and I think there are a lot of those areas, and in some of those we really have made some strides in consolidating. As you know, the city did used to have a court system. We consolidated that with the county. The city used to have used to be responsible for 911 emergency calls in the city, and now that has been merged with all of the other municipalities in the county, or at least most of them, into a centralized 911. So those kind of consolidations have occurred. What I like to think about are, you know, the sort of the back office type functions that you would have. So you know, things like computer processing and writing out, sending out checks and sending out tax bills. You know, we're both doing all those things, and it saves a lot of money if we could do that together. So we have really focused on building a new financial management system in the city. Some of the, probably one of the biggest things that I've been involved with since I've been in office, and something that I pushed for, was a joint financial management system with the county. The county was pretty much ahead of us on that front. We knew that we needed a new system. In fact, we were under from pretty strong pressure to create a new system. It was going to cost us $10 or $15 million. We found a way to join with the county, and we're up and running for less than $4 million on that system right now. And so we want to see to continue to grow that system so that it's more comprehensive of the things we do, and using it as a management tool here in the city. So I mean, I think there are a number of things that we're doing. That kind of consolidation leads to a whole new host of other opportunities that we can be working on together. And right now, this system is housed over in the county, and we continue to work together on it.
All right. Well, why don't we talk about something that I think is on the minds of a lot of people, and I even believe that there was a KQV poll that was not terribly favorable towards the mayor's proposed tax increases. And I know that you have some opinions on that. Can you talk about, let's say, what your assessment of the proposed tax increases are, which is, and I'm not talking about real estate taxes, and I'm not talking about, let's say, something that is already decided but is, let's say, proposed.
Yeah, right now, obviously, the mayor has proposed an increase in taxes, in property taxes. It's an increase to the millage rate.
What would it be in terms of percentages?
Well, that's a good question, because the budget document that has been prepared doesn't tell you what the millage is, but they do anticipate more revenue. What I've heard the mayor say is that it is basically a 5% increase. I'm opposed to it. I don't think we should be raising taxes right now. As I said, our biggest challenge is attracting more people to this city. And when you're sending the message out that when a problem arises, that your first action is, well, let's raise taxes, you know, when we really haven't examined the budget as a whole. I mean, this budget is growing dramatically over the last, this year and what's proposed for next year. You know, if you look at what we spent in 2013, which was the last year prior to the new administration, and compare to what they anticipate spending next year, it's a $50 million difference. That's a lot of growth. in spending. And so, you know, I think there are things that we should be looking at. You know, the city has a pretty simple mission. It's hard to accomplish, but it's stated pretty simply, and that is to keep people safe and keep neighborhoods clean. And if we focus on those two things, a lot of other things take care of themselves. We're doing a lot. There's a lot being paid for in this budget right now that has nothing to do with that core mission, and I think we really need to examine that before we start asking people to raise taxes.
All right, well, let's take this moment now and take a quick break, and when we return, Jim and Controller Lam will continue the conversation.
The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all your financial needs, turn to the Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill. For more information, visit online at paytaxeslater.com. Let's talk more smart money with CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang.
And welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. I'm David Baer here with Jim Lang and Pittsburgh City Controller Michael Lam.
Michael, can you tell our listeners what is happening with the redevelopment of the former Civic Arena site? I know there was just an article in the paper talking about cutting parking, and there were, I think, 274 comments. So this is a lot on people's mind. And also, as I understand it, any revenue is not going into the general fund. It's going to be, in effect, partitioned. Could you talk about that in general, please?
Yeah, so it's an interesting development, and I think obviously key to the future of the city. I mean, 28 acres right at that location, right in the middle of the city. You know, for a long time, housing the Civic Arena, which between the Civic Arena and the Crosstown Expressway, I think really acted in many ways as a barrier between downtown and the Hill District, and probably did serve to really hurt the Hill District in a lot of ways because of that, just there wasn't that connectivity. And so now there's an opportunity to sort of reconnect the Lower Hill with downtown in a more visual and a more significant way. And you know, the arena, of course, is now gone. The Penguins, as part of their deal to build the new arena and stay in Pittsburgh, they've been given the rights to develop the 28 acres, which at this point has basically been the home to a lot of parking. And so parking is probably not the highest or best use for that property, so we certainly want to see it developed. But it does raise some real financial questions, because one of the tools that's being used to help develop the site is called tax increment financing. Tax increment financing basically if you take a piece of property and what it's worth today, as you develop it, it will increase in value. And what they're basically asking is the taxes that come out of that increment, that new piece of revenue, that new increment, that new increase, that be rolled back into the development to help build infrastructure, typically, is the way it works. What's being suggested here is that not only will it be used to help the infrastructure on the site, but that it would be used, a fund would basically be created to help do other development throughout the Hill District, which I think is a bit controversial. You know, when we've tried to do that in the past, we tried a very similar proposal on this in the Strip District, and some members of council referred to that as a development slush fund, so to speak. So it does get very controversial when you do these things, because people want to know, if we are foregoing all of that revenue, what's it going for? We want to know now. If we're going to vote on this today, we need a better idea of what is that going to. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done in developing this proposal and in explaining it to who will be the decision makers. In this case, it's not just City Council, because it's a tax increment, so it goes to all of the taxing bodies. So it's council, it's the school district, and it's county council who are going to have to say, yeah, we're going to forgo those taxes so that this fund can be created to do this development. That's the one problem. The second problem is that, as I said, right now they're parking a lot of cars there. That creates a lot of parking tax revenue for the city. And if there aren't cars there parked anymore, what happens? You know, we lose that revenue.
And where do people park?
Well, where do people park? And then how is that revenue replaced as well? So there's a challenging financial issue there that the mayor and his team really need to go through. I mean, I think it is something that can work. But I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done in explaining to people what this is about. And that doesn't even go into the issues with respect to people in the Lower Hill District who feel potentially displaced. You know, this is, you know, you have people who've lived in that community for 50 years and more who want to stay there. It's their home. They want to be there. They want to be involved. You know, and as we're developing this, you know, there's been a push for more reasonably priced housing for people up there. And you know, if you lived in that neighborhood and you put your time in, I think you also would feel that, you know, you were owed the opportunity mm-hmm. to take advantage of this development. So when you look at those opportunities for more minority hiring and really having the community involved in the development. You know, I think the Penguins have at least from what I've read, are really trying to work with the community to try to get more people involved in this and create more jobs for the people who actually live in the Hill District. So, you know, those efforts are all good if they're honest and being really pushed genuinely. So, you know, it's a development that you know, I was very supportive of taking the arena down. When, you know, there were a lot of people who wanted to save the arena. You know,
I was too, but that's not true of everybody in this
room.
Yeah.
Well, I was supportive of it. You know, I tell you, it's interesting. I grew up in a neighborhood not far from downtown. I grew up in Beachview on the what would be the northern end of Beachview, the closest to the Fort Pitt tunnels, and that neighborhood. There was a church that was built there in 1960. St. Pamphilus Church, which was basically a church to replace St. Peter's Church, which was torn down at the Civic Arena. So the Franciscan friars were at St. Peter's, and now they came up to St. Pamphilus in my neighborhood, and a lot of the people who lived around St. Peter's in the Hill District came too. And so I grew up with the families of a lot of people who were displaced from the building of the Civic Arena and felt so wronged by that whole thing. And now to have the chance to go back and maybe correct history a little bit, reestablish the street grid there, and create a neighborhood there. To me, it just it was justice in many ways.
Well, what happens if that area is taken over by some nonprofits? I mean, how's that going to work?
As they develop that, you know, obviously it's going to be a mixed use development. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be some residential, there's going to be some commercial, there'll be some offices and some, you know, entertainment type development there. And so yeah, I mean, sure, there's a potential that a nonprofit could move in there. And in this city, nonprofits continue to grow. So that's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, obviously we you don't want them owning too much because of the tax consequences. But, you know, if they're creating jobs in that neighborhood, there's a positive in
right.
that, and we ought to encourage it.
But let's be clear. The initial taxes that come as the property becomes more valuable go to pay for more infrastructure for that same property. So the city, outside the fact that they're getting money and putting money into the infrastructure, isn't getting any money. And then when they finally do get some money after the infrastructure is done, that money is allocated towards a particular area, not the general budget. Is that right? Is that the big picture?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So let's just understand
for a period of years. So let's understand what happens. So as the development goes on, basically what happened is you commit that revenue to pay off bonds. So you got so the Penguins or the developers will go out and borrow, you know, whatever, $50 million. And the increment financing then is used to satisfy those bonds. So for that 20 years of the life of that bond, you're right, you don't have access to that new revenue. But what we've seen in the city in a lot of cases is that the tax increment outperforms what was expected. So in many cases, you satisfy the bonds early, or you have more room and you're able to draw down some of those funds earlier than you think. And so, I mean, tax increment financing for the most part has worked in Pittsburgh if you look at the projects. But we've never seen, first off, we've never seen a tax increment district created as big as this one. And we really haven't seen the idea that, okay, we're creating a tax increment, and rather than tell you exactly what we're doing with it, we're just going to have it set aside for a fund to do things later on that we'll talk about. So that I think that's the biggest challenge. You know, I think that's the problem that some council members will have with it, because they want to know if we're voting for this, we want to know where the money's going.
Well, there seems to be a consistent theme for you of fiscal responsibility, and we'll get to the spending side, or at least hopefully we will. But why don't we keep talking about the revenue side? Because when you were on our show in January 2013, one of the big issues was companies avoiding real estate taxes when they bought a building. So they had this kind of lease deal, so it wasn't really considered a purchase of a building and the city didn't get any transfer taxes. And that was a big issue. And I think that that was the 80-11 rule.
Yeah, 89-11.
Yeah. So what's happening there, and what's happening on the, let's say, the revenue side?
We have actually good news there, I mean, from the city's perspective. You know, we worked with Senator Furlow over that period of time, and in 2013, early part of 2013, it might have even been 2012, a bill was passed in Harrisburg banning that kind of a transaction. So that is no longer an acceptable exemption from the transfer tax. So for those kind of deals, it can't work.
You killed a loophole then.
We killed that loophole. The problem is there's still another loophole out there that's actually in many ways more troublesome, and that is what I would call the partnership loophole. And so while the 89-11 was basically a lease-to-own deal that helped you avoid the tax, this is one that's even more troublesome because it's not a transfer at all. Let's say you own you own the building that we're in right now here at KQV, but you don't own it. Well, you've created the Jim Lang Partnership owns it. I want to buy the building, but I'm not going to buy the building. I'm going to buy the Jim Lang Partnership.
I see.
So I pay you for the Jim Lang Partnership. The deed is still owned by the Jim Lang Partnership. I just own the partnership now. So since I'm not recording a new deed, there's no transfer, and therefore no transfer taxes. And so that's happening.
Would
here.
That be the same with corporations also?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, okay. It could be. What we've seen is that there is an exemption, and it's a valid exemption in Pennsylvania. It was basically set up that if I buy a company and that company owns 14 locations, I shouldn't have to pay transfer tax on every one of those locations. You know, if I own, you know, if I decide to buy the Eaton Park franchise, it's 53 restaurants or whatever it is in Pittsburgh. You know, I'm buying that business, and part of that business is those restaurants. I shouldn't have to pay. I own the Eaton Parks. I own that. I don't have to transfer all those deeds. And that's why that's how the exemption was set up. But what we've seen, you know, lawyers get kind of smart on this. They create these companies or partnerships that their only purpose is to own a building. So, and you see it all over Pittsburgh, the buildings are owned by limited partnerships. We had a transfer just recently in the Strip District. You know, the Strip District has now become a very hot real estate market. The Cork Factory, which was one of the first real apartment buildings down there, just recently sold, along with two of its other ancillary properties. And we don't know for sure what it sold because it hasn't been made public, but what we understand is that it sold for more than $100 million, those three properties. They were assessed at around $10 million. So now, you know, we know they're worth a lot more than what they were paying taxes on. But in addition to that, because they were all owned by three different limited partnerships, the buyer just bought the three limited partnerships. No deed changes hands. And so we miss out on the real value of the transfer. What they end up filing is a notice allowing the county to know that there was that this happened, and as a result of that, we do get some transfer tax based on the assessed valuation, but we know that the real value is significantly more than the assessed valuation.
All right, maybe we'll ask you about that in a couple of years.
Hopefully. That's a tougher one to get to, but we're going to try.
All right, well, speaking of tough ones to get to, you had alluded that the city pension liability is significantly less than what it was, or at least we are in better shape. Can you talk to us about the city pension liability?
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the biggest financial hurdle that we have in the city and continues to be. I mean, we have made strides, but it's still a big problem. And so, you know, when I got on the board back in 2008, you know, one of the things I was really pushing for was that we have to get more realistic in how much money we're putting into the pension fund. So we pushed for a reduction in the rate of return, you know, the anticipated rate of return. And we've done now lowered that twice. When I got there, it was 8.75%, which obviously is just not reasonable. We're down now. We lowered it to 8, and then we just last year lowered it to 7.5%, which is at least gets you closer to a more realistic number. A lot of people would argue that it should even be lower, and I thought it should have gone to 7, actually. But understanding that when you lower that rate, the one thing that does is that increases the amount of money that you've got to put in. So you have to balance, you know, that with the city's needs, you know, the city's other needs, because we do have other needs other than just pension. So, we did lower the rate of return. The result of that was to increase the floor level of what we're putting in. Fortunately, the new mayor agrees with the idea that we should be doing more than the floor. And so he's putting more in, and even he's proposing next year putting more than he did this year. So next year, and my understanding is that his plan is to continue to increase the amount that's going in so that we get to a system where we're actually putting in as much as we're paying out.
And that's part of the budget increase that you're talking about.
That's part of the budget increase, yeah, that he's for this year. So, you know, and I support that. I think we really do need to be more responsible with our pension fund. But the end result of that, like I said, we've been doing more than we're required to do. And we've benefited from a pretty good market over the last 4 years, anyhow. And so, you know, we took a fund that was, 28% funded, I think, when I got there, mm-hmm. at the low point, to a fund that is now 60% funded. The big thing that we did is a lot of people know is that we dedicated revenue to the fund. So there's a dedicated stream of revenue that goes to the pension fund every year. Parking, we take a portion of the parking tax and pay that into the fund every year. And so that has created a sort of an ownership of revenue that really has improved our situation. When we proposed this back in 2010, a lot of people said, well, that's just an accounting trick. You're just saying you're doing that. But the fact is, it's really been had a very positive effect on the fund. And so it enabled us to avoid a state takeover, which would have been really costly for the city. And I think would have just hurt the city in a very big way. But we've been able to right the ship a little bit. Now, unfortunately, we are still dependent on positive returns in the market to continue to make it. So we want to get to the point where we are, we're funding this outlay every year, and letting the fund itself grow as the market and as bonds and equities grow. Then we continue moving forward.
Yeah. Now, by the way, I want our listeners to understand. So when Michael was talking about the different rates of return, so if they have a certain amount coming in and a certain amount going out, the amount that they have right now to invest, they have to choose some investment rate. And if you have a, let's say, a 50% bond or 50% stock or even 60% equities and 40% bond, you have to come up with some type of rate that you could assume. Jack Bogle, for example, argues that after cost, 7% is reasonable going forward for the equity section. Maybe 2%, maybe 3% is reasonable for the fixed income. And if it's 50-50, so he would argue for maybe a 4.5% or 5%. And I actually had a letter to the Wall Street Journal that kind of said that. So right now, I know you're happy that it's lower than it was and that you were instrumental in getting there. But for whatever it's worth, from a guy like me who's kind of conservative, and my goal as a professional is to make sure that people have enough money to live for the rest of their lives, I would not be happy if we're using too high of an assumption of what the markets and the interest rates will return, and we're only 60% funded even with that unrealistically high number. So with all due respect, I think that we have some challenges in that area, notwithstanding the fact that it's great that it was the progress that you've made.
Yeah, well, and it's one of these things where you're really balancing a lot of issues. So while we are assuming, and I would agree with you that maybe we are assuming a rate that is not where we would like it to be. But if we're assuming that we're going to make 7.5% on our investments, is basically what we're saying, that requires us to put a certain amount of money in. We've actually been putting more than that in. So even though we're assuming a 7.5% rate, we're actually putting more in than is required by that rate. So it's we're probably contributing more, like as if we were at a 7%. So again, and it's not perfect. But if we were to reduce that rate of return to 4.5 or 5, that would require us, what we're now putting in, $50 or $60 million. We'd be putting in close to $100 million. And the fact is, our budget just could not withstand that kind of a contribution rate.
And that's the realistic reason.
Yeah.
So speaking of long-term issues and long-term problems, we're always reading about the problems with the bridges in particular, the roads, It seems like there's construction all the time, but there's enormous deficits in that area where, in effect, they're kind of like unstated liabilities. What can we do, or what is being done about particularly the bridges, because we have so many of them? And presumably, if the roads are bad, even if they're bad, we can at least drive over them, where the bridges, like in Greenfield, it's just going to go away.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, that's
so what are the people going to do?
That's going to be an incredible project in Greenfield in particular, the Greenfield Bridge Project, which is going to happen in the next couple of years. And it's really going to cause havoc when they take that bridge down. There's no doubt about it. But
is anything going up, or is that it's just
They're replacing the bridge, but the process of bringing it down is going to require us to close the parkway
for a week
at least.
Yeah.
I mean, if the plan that I'm on, my understanding of the plan is that they are going to bring in truckloads of dirt.
Right.
Cover over the parkway and create a big mound to drop the bridge onto.
Right.
I mean, it seems to me it would take more than a week just to create the mound.
Right.
So, you know, I have a feeling that that is going to be a very challenging time.
But that's a PennDOT project, right?
It is. The bridge itself is a city project.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the bridge itself is a city project. It's obviously funded for the most part through PennDOT, you know, as most of our transportation projects are. But it's a city capital budget project. And, you know, we've been planning and engineering that project for a long time now, and it's finally going to happen. And I just don't think it's going to be pretty for the people who live out in the east end and in the eastern suburbs. It's going to be a real challenge getting into Pittsburgh over that period of time.
How are they going to do it?
I don't know. I don't know the plan. I don't know what the traffic plan is.
And that's just only one bridge.
And that's one bridge. And so it's going to be a challenge. But let me just get back to the issue of infrastructure in the city, because I think it's, you know, when I first took office, people would ask me about what's the biggest financial challenge we have, and I'd always talk about pension. Today, when people ask me, I said, you know, pension's a big problem, and it continues to be. But we have a deficit that we don't talk about a lot. It's the deficit of infrastructure in this city. We have a lot of projects that need to be done. And you're right. If you drive around the city right now, you see it. You just see crumbling staircases and roadways and sewers.
Are a big issue.
Yeah, and all that is so important, and we have to find a way to fund it. You know, over the last few years, while we've made such great strides, as I said earlier, on reducing our debt, part of the cost of that is that we haven't had the money to improve our infrastructure. And so
even maintain it. Really.
We need to find a way to get more money. I know that the mayor has suggested that one of his salvos to the nonprofits is that was what he'd like them to see them do, is to, if they're going to contribute to the city, contribute so that we can do more infrastructure projects. Even if they're in the neighborhoods of those nonprofits, it would help relieve some of the burden on the city. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that I would support. I just, when you look at a city like ours, it's so hilly. Even those little staircases and retaining walls, they're really important in our neighborhoods. And so when we have them crumbling the way they are, it's just really not serving our residents all that well.
All right, well, we'll need to take one more break. Let's do it right now.
The Lang Money Hour continues on KQV AM 1410. For all your financial needs, turn to the Lang Financial Group in Squirrel Hill. For more information, visit online at paytaxeslater.com. Let's talk more smart money with CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang.
And welcome back to the Lang Money Hour. We're here with Jim Lang and Pittsburgh City Controller Michael Lamb.
Michael, my wife just went to an event, I think it was called Sustainable Pittsburgh or something like that. And I asked her how it was, and she said, oh man, we are in trouble. There's going to be so many problems with the sewage system, and they're just building more and more concrete, and there's just isn't the infrastructure to handle all this water and sewage, and we have some big problems. I thought maybe you could comment on Alcosan and, let's say, unfunded liabilities or problems that we might be having with water and sewage.
Yeah, well, she's right. I mean, we have an enormous problem here in the region, and if you think of the 83 communities that are served by Alcosan, including the city of Pittsburgh, you know, it's a problem that is billions and billions of dollars in repair. The problem is a problem of infrastructure and wet weather. You know, when it rains, the way our source system works or doesn't work, is that water, storm water, infiltrates our sewer system, and our infrastructure, our sewer infrastructure, can't handle all that water. And as a result, there are various release valves throughout our system that allow that whatever's in those sewers to be released into our fresh water. And so, you know, when you have a rainstorm, even a rainstorm as little as a tenth of an inch, you result in sewage being dumped into our rivers and streams. And the federal EPA has stepped in and said that can't happen anymore. You know, the Clean Water Act requires municipalities to deal with this issue and find ways to reduce the amount of these kind of events that happen in a given year so that the water can remain clean. I mean, I think everyone agrees that that's an admirable goal and something that we need to do. The question is, how do you do it? And it really comes down to an issue of source reduction, reducing the amount of that water that gets into the sewers.
Stormwater.
Yeah, and it gets into the sewers a number of ways. It gets into the sewers in some cases because the sewers are broken, and in those cases we need to repair those sewers. But the bigger problem is that in a lot of our older communities we have what's known as a combination sewer system. So that typically, if you live in the city of Pittsburgh, for instance, and it rains and water goes into your gutter, that water comes down into your downspout, and that downspout goes into the sewer. And that is, you know, and that creates this problem. So there are a number of ways to deal with it. One is, of course, to build new, bigger sewers, which is very expensive. Another way is to try to deal with it with a more green solution, a more natural solution. And so when you mentioned, you know, all this concrete that creates this water that has to go somewhere, having more porous surfaces, you know, is a way to...
Parking lots.
Yeah, yeah, porous surface parking lots, swales within land and changing the landscape a little bit, planting more trees, taking downspouts out of the sewer system and having gardens and saving that water, retaining that water for release later, slower release. You know, all these things help to pull that stormwater out of the sewer system and then reduce the need for bigger infrastructure. We know we're going to have some gray infrastructure to make this project work, but we can reduce the amount of gray infrastructure by getting smart about the green infrastructure. I don't know if you saw a story recently about Aetna, you know, and what they've done along the Aetna Business District, you know, where they have basically taken the sidewalks and all the buildings along the main street in Aetna, kind of now their stormwater comes out into the sidewalk, and the sidewalks have sort of gullies dug into them that are covered over with metal grates, and that is poured into, you know, that water ends up there, and it sort of feeds trees.
It doesn't go into the sewers.
So it doesn't end in the sewer system. So, creative solutions like that can really help hold down the cost of this major project, but it's still going to be a very expensive project. I mean, the project right now, as it's envisioned, is basically digging tunnels alongside of the rivers up the length of the Allegheny and the Mon so that the communities can tap their systems into the Alcosan system, and that it will involve also an expansion of the Alcosan plant itself. So it's a very big number. We did an audit there a few years ago in conjunction with the county controller, who at the time was Mark Flaherty, and we looked at Mark sort of looked at, you know, the costs of this, and we looked at making sure they had good contracting in place so that when all the engineers and construction came about, that there would be good solid policies for letting those contracts. So, you know, we're getting prepared for it, but it's a, like I said, it's a multi-billion dollar proposition, and something that we're going to be dealing with for the next 25 years.
Well, speaking of long-term budgets, what do you think of, now Mayor Peduto has submitted a proposed budget for 2015, and you might have some opinions on it because you did mention that the proposed budget, I think, is $50 million higher than the amount spent last year?
Yeah, if you look at compare it to 2013 and what they anticipate spending next year, it's a big number, $50 million more, and you wonder, where is that money going? Because one of the things he's proposing is a wage freeze. You know, our biggest expense is always labor and salaries for people. And if we're freezing...
Including yours, I assume.
Including mine, including all the elected officials. Yeah, that's only fair. When you are holding down, you know, basically a freeze on wages, you wonder where that kind of an increase comes. And part of it does come from the pension, increased pension payment. But, you know, like I said earlier, I look at the city's function, and we are an Act 47 distressed community. We are a distressed status. Some people will argue whether we should be or not. But if you buy into the idea that we are a distressed community, then we should really be spending based on what are our real core functions. And as I said earlier, our core mission is to keep people safe and to keep neighborhoods clean. And there's a lot in this budget that have nothing to do with that. And so, you know, I think that the council has to take a very critical look at an organization that, you know, I believed under the past administration that the city administration was a very top-heavy organization, and that's an organization that has through this year has only gotten top-heavier. You know, we have a lot of chiefs and not enough Indians in this city right now because we're not getting the day-to-day work done. When I look at projects that I think we're going along pretty well, one that the mayor I know supports is LED lighting. You know, we know that when we convert our streetlights to LED, we save money on energy. We were going through a process where we were buying LED lights. Our guys were installing them in their downtime, and we were doing it very cost effectively. Well, this year that has stopped. We're not doing that anymore. And so, I think we need to get back to just doing the basics of what the city needs to do.
And one last question: as you've been here over the years, I think, man, this is just insurmountable problems that you just seem to take in stride. And I, as a business owner, have quite a few problems, but nothing like you have. Why would you want to do this? And what you've been the controller now for 7 years. Very frankly, it's no secret, I always supported you for mayor. And every time I hear you, even more so, and fiscally responsible, which I don't hear very often in government. What are your political plans, or where is Michael Lamb going to be?
Well, you know, it's next year is an election year. The controller's office is up next year. I'm at the end of my term, so next year is a year. And I don't know if I'm breaking any news here tonight, but I do intend to run for re-election.
All right, there you go. We have a political announcement.
So I will be running for re-election next year to the controller's office, and I'm excited about it. I mean, I think, with the new administration, it's been interesting. It's been fun. To see new energy and new people coming into these offices. Not that I always agree or disagree with them, but having different perspectives is a good thing, and it helps us sort of revitalizes us a little bit in the things that we're doing. And so I'm looking forward to running next year and getting out and talking about the things that make this city work.
Well, I wish you the best.